Welcome to From Idea to Impact, the podcast from Arabella Advisors. I am Eric Kessler, Arabella's founder, and the proud host of the first episode of our podcast. I am so excited for this show and so grateful to you for listening in to what we are bringing to you now. And I'm really excited to introduce the first guest on our podcast, Tanya Holland. As the founder of the firm, the team gave me the opportunity to choose the first issue and the first guest for our first episode. And it was a no-brainer for me to choose food as the first issue, one, because I'm passionate about it and I lead our work at Arabella on food system change. But also, food is a great lens through which we look at so many other issues: gender, equity, and racial justice, at sustainability and health and nutrition and education. And so, great opportunity to use food as a lens into these issues. And if you're going to talk about food, there is no one else you want to have on your first show other than Tanya Holland. Tanya is such an important voice on this issue. Not only has she, as a chef in Oakland, has she won every possible award I can think of, but she's really gone above and beyond in supporting women who she employs and supporting people who may not get jobs elsewhere, in engaging in her community and increasingly as a national voice for so many issues throughout our food system, including those that I listed earlier. Tanya and I spoke via Zoom, and I'm excited to share that conversation with you today. Please enjoy my conversation with chef, author, and my friend, Tanya Holland. So Tanya Holland, you and I met through the culinary world and specifically around the community of chefs who have stepped forward as leaders influencing our food system, talking about where our food comes from and how it gets to our plates. I was remembering the last time I saw you, we were together at Princeton University and you were chatting it up with Questlove about flavors from your youth and the role food plays in our society and all that's right and wrong about our food system. I don't have a question about that. I'm just admitting that I was fanboying you and how grateful I am for you taking the time to be on the Arabella podcast.
Oh, thank you. I know that seems like so long ago. I'm grateful that the Beard Foundation has, you know, created this platform for chefs to connect, you know, with their colleagues in a way that's like, it's not competitive. We're not at an event like having to do all the cooking, and we're having just some really, you know, important, provocative conversations about our industry, about our lives. And of course, yeah, sitting down with Questlove was great.
Yeah. And he was on your, on the first episode of your podcast, which was so cool.
Remember though, the first time I met him, you were there at the salon that he held.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. We were in the kitchen.
Meats. Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, and it was funny because you were cooking, and it was sort of his party. He threw this party. You were cooking, and he came into the kitchen, and I was there, you know, because I like to be in kitchens. And he made a beeline for you, like, "Where's Tanya Holland? Like, tell me everything about you and what you're cooking." And I was like dead to him. I was like, you know, let's it was appropriately so. So one of the things that you and he spoke about that I want to come back to is flavor. I'm sort of fascinated by the flavors of your youth. How would you describe the flavors that you grew up with?
Well, they're so varied. One of my first food memories, I remember walking into this home that my parents were buying, and the last family who lived there was Cuban, and I didn't recognize the smells that I later learned were like coriander and cumin. And, you know, I was like, "Mommy, this doesn't smell like our house." And she's like, "Don't worry, it eventually will." But then, you know, later, of course, I'm like, "Oh my God, I wish I had had some of their food." But my mom, you know, is from Louisiana. So she was always cooking a lot of food she grew up with, fried chicken, cornbread, collard greens, black eyed peas. My dad's from Virginia, so, you know, another Southerner, but a different, you know, repertoire.
Different kind of Southerner.
Yeah, a lot more potatoes. My mom was more rice and ham, you know, my dad. And then also, you know, he was really into the grill, having, you know, grilling meats and things like that. And then they started a gourmet cooking club with five other couples. And so that lasted for 20 years. And I was exposed to what they did there, which was soup to nuts, cuisines from around the world, as well as American regional cuisine. And so a lot of those dishes ended up in my mom's repertoire, from chicken cacciatore to matzo ball soup, German potato salad, Mexican wedding cakes. Like, these were like, you know, favorites that just kept circulating. And, you know, I went just off to college with, you know, this big knowledge of food, and I took it for granted. I just, you know, I didn't realize that so many of my classmates had never been exposed to anything, you know, beyond pizza and macaroni and cheese and hot dogs and things like that.
Do you now at Brown Sugar Kitchen and all the other cooking you do outside of the restaurant, do you try to emulate those flavors, or do you sort of evolve beyond them? How do those flavors from your youth play out in Tanya today?
Yeah, I feel like they're inspiring, but I've definitely, I think, honed my palate since, you know, then, from working in New York restaurants, Boston, and training in France and working around France, and then living in the Bay Area. So it's definitely been an evolution, but, you know, certainly certain flavors, certain times of year, certain occasions remind me of those things.
I was reading an editorial about Brown Sugar Kitchen, and specifically about the shrimp and grits on your menu. And it said that customers have been known to leave love letters for you on the table after they eat your shrimp and grits. What would a love letter to Chef Tanya sound like?
Well, there's been some are like, these are the best grits I've ever had. I traveled miles to get here to have these, you know, thank you. Just really like, you know, appreciation for the care that we put into the food. So, you know, it's just so gratifying. I'm fortunate that I get that instant gratification for my work.
I know that a lot of the gratification you get is from the impact that you're having in your community in Oakland and beyond. But when I think of you, I think of part of that impact being defined by who you employ, who's on your team, and who you serve in the restaurant. But starting with who's on your team, you know, you've given so many opportunities to young women of color, not just in hiring them and giving them an opportunity, but treating them and your whole team equitably, and I would say with dignity. Where does that instinct come from? Does that sort of come natural to you? Is that in reaction to something?
Yeah, I mean, I think nurturing is definitely part of my nature. Just the way I was raised, you know, my parents extended hospitality all the time and took care of people that weren't related to them. You know, like my dad used to recruit engineers for Eastman Kodak, and so many of those students became, you know, like his godchildren, if you will. You know, they came over and had meals with us. And then also part of it is reaction to, you know, what I didn't receive and what I always wanted. So I want to create that environment and those opportunities for, you know, women of color, people of color, anyone who might be marginalized, you know, or judged for incontrollable reasons. So that's part of it too.
And the restaurant industry, of course, because of the pandemic, is going through such, you know, massive devastation, but it's also at a moment of reconciliation that I think many would say is long overdue around the workforce, not just in the restaurants, but in up and down the supply chain, and everything that brings food from farm to our fork. And it seems like there's a real need to really sort of tear things down and build them back up. I wonder if sitting where you are today in the middle of a pandemic, in the middle of a global racial reconciliation, but one that has been particularly stark in the food industry and the restaurant industry. Are you optimistic? Do you feel like things are, is there a path to reconciliation and a path to more equity in the food world? Is that still out of reach? How do we get there?
Yeah, I feel more optimistic than ever. Like for the first time in, you know, my career and my life, I just feel hopeful that this change is sustainable, you know, to really just alter this systemic racism and sexism. And I mean, I'm hopeful. God only knows, you know, what's going to happen with, you know, the election and all that stuff. But as far as our industry, I feel like there's a new awareness that people are realizing who's been left out. And then also the younger generation is, they're really fighting for it. They're like, nope, I will not shut up. I will not, you know, be quiet. If you look at what happened at Bon Appetit, even, you know, some of the things that are happening at the James Beard Foundation, this new generation, God bless them, because, you know, I think that I know that, you know, I would try to speak on this subject decades ago and just get shut down, you know, because there was nobody else speaking on it with me. So this has been great.
And do you find yourself still having to prompt and lead those conversations? Or you speak of a new generation. Is it now sort of commonplace among, you know, younger chefs and younger leaders in the food world that you can be a supporter and a follower? Like how deep seated is it at this point, and how much do you feel the burden of having to lead that?
I still feel responsible. No, it doesn't feel burdensome. It just feels like I have a sense of responsibility because I now have a bigger platform. And I, you know, I've always like worked on my platform because I knew that that was really the only way I was going to be able to impact change is, you know, just to be able to get my voice heard by other change makers, you know, whether it's media or industry leaders or investors or bankers, whatever. Like, I just got to get on the radar. So I feel like, again, I can still like forge forward and just, you know, create the path with a little bit more ease for those who come behind me.
So part of your platform, in addition to books and podcasts and TV shows and interviews, is your dining room. And my perspective is that your restaurant is sort of it's almost a master class in breaking down barriers. I mean, you have, you know, Oakland residents who are there for the soul food. You have celebrities, particularly Black celebrities, who almost make a pilgrimage to Brown Sugar Kitchen, right? If they're anywhere near San Francisco, they're coming to Oakland and eating your food. But then you are also, through this pandemic and before, did so much to serve people in need who maybe couldn't get into the dining room, but deserve good quality food with dignity. And I'm reminded that in recognition of all of that, who you hire, how you treat them, who's in your dining room, who you serve. The Golden State Warriors gave you one of their sort of amazing Oakland town jerseys, which must have been so incredibly cool. How do you think about sort of who eats your food, and what role does that community play in the impact that you're having? Do you think about that? Do you think about sort of who you're serving and how, as much as you think about who you employ?
Yeah, because I worked in so many restaurants where I never saw anyone who looked like me in the dining room, or anyone, you know, of color, of anything, in so many restaurants. So I always wanted to create a room where everybody feels welcome, and they do. And, you know, I mean, there's celebrities of all kinds coming over the years, you know, Rita Moreno, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Henry, I just blinked on his name. The Fonz.
Henry Winkler.
Henry Winkler.
Oh my God, you serve the Fonz.
Yeah, I know. Of course, my other cooks knew him as his other roles. But yeah, that was like, that blew my mind. I was like, how did you find out about us? And then, you know, I always say to people, especially my old place with, there was so small, well, you know, 50 seats. And you'd look around and you'd see local law enforcement or firemen sitting next to, like, you know, four Chinese ladies sitting next to a table of some guys, you know, hip hop guys. And then, you know, sitting next to some Burning Man sculptors. And, you know, it was just like the melting pot that I've always wanted. And I think, you know, that intention has to come from the top. It has to come from ownership, because otherwise people will walk into a place and they can sense if they're not fully welcome, whether it's being an employee or a guest. And no matter who is working for me, it's everybody's welcome here, just doesn't matter. And so it's definitely, it's more of a subconscious thought that I have. It's just, something that's always been a value of mine.
So you said that you sort of consciously built this platform so that you could have impact, which is really unique. I mean, I've been working with, high visibility chefs for a long time. And my approach when I started this work, almost a decade ago, was to find chefs who had a platform and convince them to use it for good, or at least give them the tools that they may not have had to use it for good. And you're saying something very different, which is you had good and you had impact in mind from the beginning, and you've built a platform to enable that. That's really unique.
Hmm. I hadn't thought of it that way. But yeah, that part has been intentional, especially because I did see these other established chefs have more access, have more influence. And I knew that they got that through their businesses, that they had built, or their media presence that they had built. And so, yeah, I just saw it as a great tool. It's a tool, really.
And so so let's talk about some of the work you and I have engaged in together on advocacy and advocating for a food system that makes healthy, nutritious, sustainably produced food accessible to everyone. With all the devastation that we're facing from the pandemic to politics, what's speaking to you now as the place where you want to have most impact? What's sort of front of mind right now as you think outside your kitchen to the community where you'd like to see the most change and contribute towards it?
Wow. Well, there's several. I wish I could narrow it down, but I would say top three are definitely sustainability is definitely up there. There's just so much education that still needs to happen with, people in terms of composting and recycling and reusing and lack of waste and just how it contributes to global warming and, just so much waste, really. Obviously, still equality, equity, inclusivity, however you want to, label it. I want to see more women and more, people of color getting the same access to opportunities, especially when it comes to capital and business. I'm really passionate about entrepreneurship. So I think if, somebody really wants to take the risk and they have a great idea and a great product, maybe they could be incubated. Maybe there's more programs like that that have to happen. But, people can't be successful if they don't have access to the tools. That's really been my point more than anything. And the tools can be capital, one can be education, there's so much. And then the other one is real estate. And I think that has to really be addressed in so many cities because, first of all, for restaurants, that is, that can be a game changer for a restaurant. If they don't have a good real estate deal, I think landlords and developers need to partner more with the restaurants if they want that amenity. And it's not just a luxury, it creates culture. Restaurants provide memories. And also they have to keep in mind that the workers of these small businesses need to be able to live within a reasonable distance from their work, or there has to be some significant public transportation system in place. But, it's a whole ecosystem that really needs to be thought through because it's not going to be sustainable. And then we're going to have these vacant spaces and vacant culture if we don't really figure this out.
You talked about building your platform and, you have two books, restaurant, podcast, you do endless interviews and TV appearances. Is there a part of your platform that remains to be built? What's missing from the platform? What's the next frontier for how your voice has influence?
Yeah, I really, you know, I would like to establish a nonprofit arm, and part of it's going to be educational. And I really, I mean, I've done a lot of teaching, mostly through to recreational home cooks, but to some culinary students. And I think there's still so many skills for them to develop, especially softer skills, real like hospitality and what that means, you know, as far as providing people with experience, but then also some skills like, you know, I have a lot of resources and I know what it takes to run a business. And a lot of these kids in their culinary programs are not learning, you know, basic accounting, or they don't even understand what a publicist does, or what, you know, all these different aspects of what it takes to really build your business, to create, you know, to increase your platform. So I like to, you know, with my own staff, I'm like an open book. Anything they want to ask me, you know, I'm fine with. I've had a lot of struggles, you know, over the years, and I've learned the hard way, had a steep learning curve. And I don't, you know, I don't think there's any reason why anyone else should go through that if they don't have to. And then I look at like a lot of the communities that are marginalized, whether it's immigrants or African-Americans or Latinx folks in this country or other. And I'd love to give them access because this is such a great entry-level industry. It can be, you know, to the workforce in this country. But there's, you know, like I said, there's got to be some kind of, you know, revision of how it all works, you know, with economically.
I just have a couple more questions, but I want to come back to something that that you mentioned earlier. It's hard for me to imagine this not feeling like a burden to you. I mean, you are looked at as a leader, as a mentor, you know, by a ton of people you know and people you teach, and probably by 10 times that you don't know and will never meet, but nonetheless look up to you. It seems like so much pressure to not just do all that you do in your restaurant and on your own platform, but as an influencer. Does that ever strike you? Does the awesomeness of that ever sort of make you step back and think, holy crap, I got a lot to do here?
No, not really. Yes and no. I mean, I want to say no because I'm really good at compartmentalizing. There's just so much I want to do and I feel very capable. And, you know, I'm trying to do things that I get joy from. And I do get a lot of joy out of moving things forward and influencing people's opinion and thought about what is, you know, what is true? What is, you know, what is the role of, you know, what chefs can be, what they can look like, what can a boss look like, what can, you know, I've opened a lot of minds over the years, and that's really gratifying to me. And I want to continue to do that because I really believe that there's enough room for everyone. There's enough resources, enough space, but I just really believe we've got to work together, you know, in a way, and it's going to look a little differently, and people just have to accept that everybody can bring something interesting to the table. Everybody can contribute. It's not just a handful of people that look a certain way, you know, that are able to, you know, make the right decisions or make the best decisions. And, you know, honestly, Eric, I asked my dad when I was younger if I could be president. And, you know, and I met President of the United States. And, you know, I think when I think back to why I asked him, it was more like, it was that fact. It's like, I want to make some changes around here. Like, this doesn't make sense to me, you know? And that's just how my mind has worked for a long time. I mean, I wish I wasn't like firstborn, you know, type A overachiever. It is exhausting, but that's who I am.
I only have one other question, which is you've got a long list of accomplishments ahead of you, but looking back to date, what are you most proud of?
Well, you know, I've been asked that question before, and it's, God, that's really, that's hard to say.
Let me ask it differently. And forgive me if this is too personal, but what would your mom and dad be most proud of today?
I don't know. Well, I would say, I think the fact that I've just held my own, so to speak, like even I was talking to my dad a few weeks ago, and he was saying like, I've always had this focus, like I just always kept going, and that he sees me as someone who's very self-made. And I mean, obviously they supported me, but you know, it's not like I had some inheritance or, you know, or anything. So, you know, that's, I think as I arrive and accomplish the goals that I want to accomplish, especially in terms of the financial stability goals that I have, that will make me very proud, because and I don't rest on my laurels, and you know, I don't feel like anything is beneath me. You know, even in my restaurant, I'm still, you know, sweeping the floors and picking stuff off and, you know, pointing out the spider webs. But I think, you know, just the recognition by peers have always been great. So the James Beard appointment is really, I mean, I'm floored, you know, it's like, I never expected anything like that.
You're referencing just being asked to join the board of the James Beard Foundation and chair the awards committee moving forward.
Yeah. It's significant.
Richly deserved.
Thank you.
Well, Chef Tanya Holland, my friend and mentor, I most admire how you walk through this world with such a clear purpose and such self-determination while maintaining this, you know, unbridled optimism, which is so unique these days. And I'm privileged to call you a friend, and so grateful to you for joining the Arabella podcast. So thank you so much.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to see you, and hopefully it'll be in person one day soon.
Thank you. The restaurant is Brown Sugar Kitchen on Broadway in Oakland, now open for takeout. And the podcast is Tanya's Table, featuring Questlove, Aisha Taylor, Tyler, Danny Meyer, Alice Waters, and so many more. Thank you, Chef Tanya Holland, for everything.
Thank you for listening to From Ideas to Impact. To learn more about the guests featured on this podcast and the work we do at Arabella Advisors, please visit our website at www.arabellaadvisors.com.